Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Zoltan Heinl teaches political science at the University of California, San Diego. He's the author of White Backlash, Immigration, Race, and American Politics, the title of which is likely to generate a highly charged discussion in today's political environment, as is a discussion he's leading this evening here at Grand Center. It's titled Race, Turnout, and Bias in Local Politics. This seems to be a perfect time to be looking at things that influence elections and voting patterns. Zoltan Heinl, welcome. So nice to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're in from San Diego. I hope you see the sun while you're in St. Louis.
It may not happen, but we'll do fine either way.
I hope it does. Zoltan, where are we now in national and local politics when it comes to race bias and white backlash?
That's a large question, lots of different angles to take there. Yeah. But one of the things that we looked at in the book in particular is the notion of what effect is immigration having on American politics. So you typically, when you think about immigration, you think about what are the attitudes and actions of immigrants themselves. What we looked at is how is immigration shaping the attitudes and political actions of non-immigrants, of your typical white American, essentially. And what we see is that increasingly over time, the connection between how you think about immigrants, whether you view them positively or negatively, and your political preferences has become increasingly tight. So 20, 30 years ago, those two things really weren't connected. Now, if you express concern, fear, anxiety about immigration and immigrants, and in particular undocumented immigrants, you are very likely to be Republican, to vote Republican, to identify with the Republican Party. And if you express more positive views, you're much more likely to be a Democrat. So it's become central and I think is driving the increasingly large share of white Americans who are supporting the Republican Party.
Well, let's take a look at what happened last night in Wisconsin. Do you see any of this in play there? And
sure,
then,
sure. You know, there you're obviously looking at the two parties separately, but within the Republican Party, it's very clear that the polls from the last few weeks and months are showing that Trump supporters are of this sort of extreme anti-immigrant group. Not exclusively, but there again, there's a close connection. So, how you feel about immigrants is very predictive of whether or not you support Trump if you're on the Republican side. And I would say it's not just immigrants. Obviously, there are other factors, but it is a big factor in driving support for Trump.
Well, race has long since been an issue, and certainly is in this part of the country, more so than the immigrant issue, I would think. Is that
That's absolutely fair to say. And I think immigration is a new variant on the racial story. So it is very much true that since really the 1960s, our racial attitudes have become intertwined with our political preferences. Mm-hmm. And if you have, again, concerns about the African-American population and concerns that they're getting too many resources, those sorts of things, you're much more likely to be a Republican. This new element has just further move the dial on that sort of racial. So we're more racially divided than we were before. Race and immigration are more central to our politics and are, again, leading to this situation now where we have some 60, 63, 65% of whites on one side nationally supporting the Republican Party and the overwhelming majority of blacks, Latinos, and Asian Americans on the other side supporting the Democrats.
You talked. Your survey involved several thousand people, as I understand that, drawing you to these conclusions that you've come to.
Yeah,
all over the country.
Yeah. So I mean, there's one story, the national story, which is what we've talked about. There, the effects are concentrated more in places where you have a larger immigrant population. Mm-hmm. So California, with an early increase in the number of immigrants in the mid-90s, was one of the first states where immigration was an issue, and the Republican governor essentially put immigration on the political front page and was able to garner a lot of white support as a result of that. It's exacerbated in areas of high concentration of immigrants, but it is a national story as well.
Why this hostility?
That's an excellent question, one that I'm not sure I have an answer for. So if you look at the the reality of immigration, right? So if we look at the economics of immigration, we know that immigrants aren't a massive burden on American society. In fact, most economists would argue that over the long term, immigration is helping our economy grow. Mm-hmm. We also have lots of evidence about immigrants not hurting us in other ways. So what is the fear? What is the anxiety? And part of it is, I think, a worldview. So there's a segment of society that's afraid of change and change in all sorts of forms. But immigration is one of it, globalization, technological change. If you, A, are concerned about those changes, and B, are in a position not to capitalize on them. So a lot of this is driven by the white working class. They feel like the world is passing them by, certain segments of the white working class, and that they're losing. They once had a lot of power. They don't have that power today, and they feel like they are losing more and more of that power as we move forward in the future. And so the white backlash is essentially, I'm afraid of what's happening. I'm scared. I'm concerned. And I'm looking, you know, what's the target that I can use? And politicians are feeling that process as well. So it's not just voters automatically reacting. It's politicians. And I think also the media is apt to portray a negative view of immigrants. And that's all feeding into this threat narrative, which is then feeding into the politics of it.
Would you think that what's going on overseas now with this wave of immigration that's coming from the Middle East into Europe, is that playing at all into fears in this country of the foreign?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how central it's become, but certainly, you know, Trump talking about barring Muslims is part of that. And, you know, and again, as you say, this is happening in Europe as well. So I think it's now increasingly being tied to not just immigration, but to security and terrorism and religion. So the fears are broadening and are certainly part of the Trump phenomenon. How greatly they're shaping the, so to say, the partisan balance of power in American politics is as of yet uncertain. But if things continue in this way, I think those will be increasingly central issues.
How else do you think it might be changing, as aside from the fact that it's pushing us to the right?
You know, it's dividing us racially as well. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But so, you know, you have increasingly whites on one side and racial and ethnic minorities on the other. And Muslim Americans, Asian Americans are good examples of where those communities weren't politicized and weren't partisan a decade ago or so. And Asian Americans are now overwhelmingly Democratic when they do vote. And Muslims, it looks like we might see some of the same sorts of movements. So as these issues become more central, we become more racially divided. And that has you know, all sorts of potentially negative implications in terms of conflict and tension and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I was about to ask. None of us has a crystal ball. But the question is, where is all of this taking us or likely to take us?
Right. You know, I think over the short term, it's going to lead to more conflict, more division. My perhaps more positive story is if you look at states where that might be predictive of the future. So California is a good example. So we had a pretty severe backlash against immigrants starting in the 1990s. Once we became a majority-minority state in fact, well beyond majority-minority, you saw a bit of a change in the tide. So in the last few years, California has become more Democrat. Republicans have ceased to focus on the issue of immigration in the state as much as they had. And you've got a series of progressive policy changes aimed at addressing some of the issues of the minority community, lots more funding of education, for example, reform of criminal justice. So there may be a point at which power shifts and this polarization ends, but I wouldn't predict it happening very quickly in the very near future at the national level.
I suppose we have to suggest also that what's going on nationally now in this political season is accelerating all of what you're talking about here, these attitudes.
Yeah, no, this year, I would imagine when the votes are tallied at the end in November that we will be – it may be the most racially polarized election, presidential election in American history. So you cannot have one party demonizing, you know, large swaths of the population, Muslims, immigrants, and not have that affect the ways in which both whites and racial and ethnic minorities are voting and polarizing those two groups. So it's problematic.
Do we have any sense of what sort of a percentage we're talking about of people who fall into this this leaning right or in the right camp?
You know, so the other part of the story is so the short answer is probably no, and I would still predict that the Democrats will win the presidential election. So you know, the national population, there's two sides to this story. One is the minority population is growing, and so the Democrats have an advantage and a growing advantage over time. The white population, relatively speaking, is declining, and Republicans in the last few contests have gotten 90% of their votes from white mm-hmm. Americans. So structurally, at the national level, Republicans are in a difficult position. Having said that, it is possible that there are still – so only the Republicans have garnered about 63% of the white vote at a maximum. That number could increase, and whites are still the majority of voters – still the majority of active voters. And so this kind of anti-immigrant rhetoric could still win the Republican Party more votes. I still would, you know, strongly believe that the prediction is a Democratic president in the next election.
Could win the Republican Party more votes by Democrats moving over to that side because of this attitude?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of working class white Democrats with negative attitudes towards immigrants have already shifted. But there are some who could still be convinced by a Trump candidacy, for example, that they should move over to the Republican Party.
Well, we read that the Trump, who I guess epitomizes what we're talking about here in terms of trying to exploit this this attitudinal thing, the numbers we see indicate that he's got about 35% support in the Republican Party. That's not enough, really. 35% leaves 65%, you know, leaning otherwise.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. If he wins the nomination, there will undoubtedly be more Republicans who support. If the choice is between Trump and Hillary Clinton, you know, most of us in this country are partisan and vote along partisan lines, and so he will get a lot of the Republican vote and much more than 35% were he to be nominated. Yeah. Having said that, the polls also suggest that, you know, in a national contest right now, Trump's way behind and most likely would be. And really, the only circumstance under which Trump eventually wins the presidency is if there's some scandal on the Democratic side, and in particular, an old important skeleton comes out of the Clinton closet.
There is the potential for that. We keep hearing about this FBI investigation, exactly. For instance. We have to take a break. We'll do that now. I'm having a discussion with Zoltan Hajnal. He is going to be speaking here at Grand Center this afternoon and evening at 4 o'clock, from 4 to 6 o'clock, are the times that I have. Is that correct? The subject will be race, turnout, and bias in local politics. We'll come back and continue our conversation on these issues in just a moment. Stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Zoltan Hajnal. One of the things I wonder if your survey and your study looked into was the attitudes of immigrants, primarily Hispanics. I think that's basically what we're generally talking about in this country, and how they're viewing what's going on.
So we didn't look at it in our survey at all, but there's lots of data out there to look at them. And they, you know, first of all, Latinos vote two-thirds for Democratic mm-hmm. candidates and align with the Democratic Party. So that's underlying all this, largely Democratic. Also, very concerned about immigration and what they feel is an attack on them, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it's not the case that immigration is always the most important issue for Latino voters. Mm-hmm. There are a number of other issues, and typically jobs and the economy are highest on their agenda, education often as well. But immigration is in many ways sort of a gateway issue. So if you are using rhetoric of the kind that the Republican Party is often using, if you're using Trump-type rhetoric saying that all Mexican immigrants are rapists and that sort of thing, you are so surveys very clearly show that that's drawing a lot of anger from the Latino community and likely to push them even further towards the Democratic camp. One of the other elements that's often not talked about with immigrants, with Latinos and both Asian Americans is for both groups, the largest segment of the population is actually apolitical or nonpartisan. So there's of the active Hispanics, the active Asian Americans, most vote Democratic, but there's a larger segment that is inactive that doesn't actually know where they fit in American politics or doesn't like the options that are available. And that's really important because both the Republican and the Democratic Party could begin to target that population. So there's a reason for both parties, in essence, to move away from racial polarization and using race and immigration as a wedge issue. There's a motivation for both parties to actively solicit and engage the immigrant population and to do so with compelling policies and certainly with softer rhetoric as well.
Certainly it remains to be seen if that, in fact, is going to happen.
I'm hopeful that would happen. I don't predict that that will happen anytime soon.
What about the African-American attitude? What does your study show about that?
You know, relatively flat, very strong support for the Democratic Party, not much divisions by class within the African-American community. So the one area where blacks are maybe divided is, in fact, immigration, or one of the areas where they're divided. So there are some concerns within the African-American population about how immigration is affecting them. Immigrants often move into some of the poor inner city neighborhoods where blacks currently reside. That leads to competition for housing, competition for jobs. And so there is some concern about that, but certainly in most cases not enough to push African Americans towards the Republican Party or Trump-type candidates.
That's what I was just going to ask, if in fact that could happen, but
we see no evidence of that happening at all.
I know that our friend Dave Robertson from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, who you'll be with later today, wanted you, as you come to this part of the country, to try to relate what you've been doing and what you've been thinking to Ferguson. Are you able to do that?
Sure. I mean, I think the immigrant backlash is not all that different from a backlash against African Americans or racial resentment of African Americans. So in both cases, the backlash is coming from more than anywhere else, working class whites who feel like their status, their power, their position is being threatened, and society is moving too quickly, passing them by, and they're looking for someone to blame for all this. And in a case like Ferguson, a lot of it is whites targeting African Americans, feeling resentful of African Americans and what they're doing. And, you know, nationally, a lot of it is whites being concerned about immigration. So I see them as very similar.
I'd like to open our phone lines. Folks like to get into this conversation in the time we have remaining. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or if you'd prefer to send a tweet, we'll take that at STL on air. Have we gone through in recent history anything like this before?
So I wouldn't say necessarily recent history, but a history of immigration backlash is a history of America in many ways. So we've had time periods where we were all concerned about the Germans, we were afraid of the Italians, the Chinese were a big threat, the Japanese, and so on and so forth. And what you find over the course of history is as immigration, the numbers increase, the backlash tends to increase. But once the population has been here for a while, so once the Italians and the Germans have been here for a couple of generations, we realize that they're not all that different from us, whoever us is. They assimilate and that the concern eventually fades away. And so I predict very much the same thing happening here. So and we actually have seen in the last few years that immigration from Mexico in particular has gone down quite dramatically. we have more and more second generation Hispanics, third generation, and the data are also very clear that that the rates of assimilation today are very similar to the rates of assimilation before. So we may yet realize it's not a problem.
The nativists, though, have not gone away. They're still out there.
The natives are there, and it may take more than a few years for those sentiments to go away.
Well, again, we've been through this before, so we'll see how it shakes out. And one of the things I'd like to point out and get your response to is the fact that within a very few years, within a decade or two or a couple of decades, whites are going to be the largest minority in this country. And I would have to think that's going to change things quite dramatically.
Yeah, eventually it will. But, you know, Ferguson is another so good example here. So what we have seen and what we see across the country as diversity changes the local population, political change happens much more slowly. So you get a majority-minority population at one point in time, but the power structure doesn't shift immediately. It you know, the incumbents in power, typically white incumbents in power, don't readily give up that power. And so it takes a long time. And we know that whites are more active, generally speaking, politically than racial and ethnic minorities on average. And so you need oftentimes overwhelming majority of racial and ethnic minorities in order to affect change. And the way we see that today in today's world is America today is already relatively diverse. But if you count up the number of elected officials at the state, local, national level, 90% of our elected officials across the country, roughly speaking, are still white. And so it takes time.
Right. Let's take a couple of calls. We'll start with Tony calling from Wentzville. Tony, thanks for being with us. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I just want to make a little comment here. I can't remember the guy's name that's speaking or whatever, and he was talking about middle-class white people and voters, and I'm middle-class. I consider myself middle-class and white. And, you know, I don't fear black people moving into power. I want to help them, okay? And I think the best way to do that, and a lot of people don't agree with me, is, and that's why I'm voting for Donald Trump, because he's going to bring jobs back to this country. And that's the main reason why I like Donald Trump. I mean, I think he's got a good, solid plan for bringing jobs back, which I think would help the black community. It'd help us all, as far as that goes.
Could you, Tony, excuse me, can you tell me what that Trump plan is for bringing jobs back?
Well, you know, he talks about he's going to, you know, put like tariffs on goods that come into this country to where manufacturers might be more, and they might have more incentives to move more manufacturing jobs back here.
Okay, well, let's get a response from our guest here. Thank you, Tony.
So, yeah, and I don't want to make the claim that everybody who votes Republican is in some way anti-minority or anti-immigrant. That's absolutely not true. There, again, are some correlations, but you can't make that generalization. What I would also say sort of in response to the notion of supporting Republicans to aid minorities is let's look actually at the data. So what has happened in the last five decades when Republicans have been in power at the presidential level versus when Democrats have been in power? And if you actually add up the numbers, on average, black incomes have gone up considerably under Democratic presidents. They've gone down or they've not gone up under Republican presidents. Black unemployment has gone down considerably under Democratic presidents, not under Republicans. So the data in terms of the agendas of the two parties suggests that one party's agenda is more favorable for racial and ethnic minorities.
And Tony, we thank you for the call. Let's bring in Mark. He's calling from St. Louis. Mark, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to challenge the identification in the Trump supporters' minds that you outlined of their animosity towards immigrants and their possible or probable animosity towards African Americans. I see the Trump movement as being anti-African American and anti-immigrant, but I think it comes from very, 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 very different sources. And I think you have to point out I have to point out that, one, the issue with immigration is essentially the claim that these people who are here illegally are not citizens. And they have never said that African Americans are not citizens. There's all this talk of anchor babies with regards to Hispanic immigrants, not so with blacks. The other thing is that there's never been a stated position on African Americans anywhere in the Trump movement. You can't find it on their website. You can't find it in their speakers. You can't really, even Trump himself, problematic as he is, has never really spoken on the subject of civil rights, except in his rallies he will point to black men and women and encourage his followers to beat them up, which I think is pretty much dispositive in terms of talking about his racial motives. But the putative claim that you've made, which is that the Trump supporters see those two, you know, in their xenophobia, sees those two groups as the same, I don't find that at all plausible.
All right, I have to stop you there so we can get a response because time is getting away from us. But thanks for calling.
You know, so the point that attitudes towards immigration and attitudes towards African-Americans are distinct and some of the issues related to the two groups are distinct is absolutely accurate. On the other hand, in surveys, when we ask people about their attitudes towards African-Americans, when we ask them about their attitudes towards immigration and the undocumented, those two sets of factors are very highly correlated. So those who are negative towards African-Americans typically are also concerned about immigration. So they may be distinct, but they're also clearly in some way related.
Lots to talk about. I wish we had more time, Zoltan, but we don't. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Zoltan Heinl will be leading a discussion this afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock here at Umselet Grand Center. The talk is titled Race, Turnout, and Bias in Local Politics. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.